And right now it's time to once again talk school news, our new weekly segment with Elizabeth Emmett from the Napa Valley Unified School District, where she manages communications of various kinds. And good morning once again to you.
Good morning, Barry.
You have a lot to communicate about around the development of a budget. We're going to talk a little bit about budgets and school funding today.
Yeah, I actually thought we could talk about school funding today. And the reason that I thought that would be a good idea is last week, Dr. Massetti, our superintendent, had her first meeting of her parents' advisory committee that, you know, a lot of superintendents have them. And there was a nice packed room of parents. And as Dr. Massetti was talking about the strategic plan that we put together, you know, some of our goals, some of the things that we want to do, the conversation got stuck when we got to the point of talking about revenue and, you know, ways to increase revenue, ways to decrease expenses, because a lot of people were really surprised to hear some facts about school funding. I think there's a, you know, it's not rocket science, but there are some misconceptions about it that really affect people's point of view. So I thought maybe we should go and talk about that a little bit, maybe shed some light on the process.
I love correcting misconceptions.
Yeah. Okay, good.
One that I ran across very recently, possibly, I guess it was during the days when we had so much smoke from the campfire.
Yeah.
And the assumption that schools will be in session unless they're absolutely compelled not to because of the money that you get per day per student. And then I found out later there's a waiver process, right? Mm-hmm, so maybe that's one we could touch on.
Well, let me just say this about that. Things like that happen in the community and people are hopping on Facebook to see what happens and they're talking about things. And one of the comments that we often see is, well, you know, the school district just wants kids in school because they want the money.
Right.
And I can say this for absolute certain that, you know, the conversations that go on are always health and safety is always first. And as long as, you know, we have assurances that it's safe, it's about the education. You know, there's a lot of different factors that go into whether or not students are successful in their education. There's the ones we can think of, you know, are they getting enough sleep? Do they have enough good nutrition? Do they have good connections to the adults in their life? Do they have support from their families? But the number one indicator of success is attendance, being there, being in school, being with your classmates, being with your teacher and learning. So knowing that our number one business is making sure that helping children learn, then that attendance is paramount. And so on those times, those emergency sort of times, yes, we can apply for a waiver from the state for the funding, and, you know, we can get the funding anyway. So that's really not our prime thought when those things are happening. It's about, and also the other side of that same coin is some kids, when there's emergencies and things, they want to be with their, you know, it makes them feel better to be with their school, to be with their teacher, to be with their peers. So that's not a small factor either. So there's a lot of reasons that go into that, but the ADA, the, you know, average daily attendance money that we get is not the primary factor.
And just to reiterate that, because that a lot of people don't understand that at all. Mm-hmm. If there's an emergency, you know, let's say there was a broken water main and the school was flooded and you had to not have session at that school, you would be able to say to the state, we couldn't have class, it was an emergency, so we get a waiver on the ADA for that day, for those kids.
Yep.
Right? It's that simple.
Yep.
So that takes away the, you know, feeling, like you say, that some people expressed on social media, like, well, the schools really don't care about the health of the kids. It's the money.
Yes.
Right? It takes that away.
Yes.
All right. Very good. So what else can we learn about budgeting and money?
Well, let me just back up to 10,000 feet here and just talk a little bit about how our schools do get funded. And, you know, in the United States, primarily, if you're funding public K-12 education, you're looking at your state and you're looking at your city, your locality, your town, your city, whatever. So there's a little bit of federal money that comes in for specific programs, Title I programs, which are for school districts that have a lot of children who are economically disadvantaged. There's money that comes in from the federal government for special education programs, that type of thing. But for the most part, when you're talking about funding your schools, you're talking about your state and your local. And then also, again, locally generated money, which we can talk, we'll talk about that in a minute. But I think when people in Napa Valley, you know, one of the things that really struck the members of the Parents Advisory Committee last week was when they were told that they, you know, we live in Napa Valley. We all, if you own a property, you pay property taxes. And I think the conception is that those, then you pay that money to the county and the county writes a big check to the schools for, to pay for the K-12 schools. And that's just not the case. That's not how it works. So when you pay that property tax money, when I pay mine, when you pay yours, it goes up to the state and then the state gives it back to us. Per, in a per student basis. So the fact that we live in an area with high property taxes, you know, billion-dollar economies, we're not just getting a chunk of money from property taxes and saying, go make beautiful schools. It doesn't happen that way. So it goes up to the state, and then the state, we there's two types of school districts in the state of California. There's what we call local, you know, LCFF, which is our local control funding formula, districts, which Napa Valley Unified is one. And then there's other districts which are called basic aid districts. And they have, they're different because they have enough property tax, like excess revenue in their property taxes. It's a complicated formula. But the upshot is for all students who are LCFF districts like us, we get about, and these are round numbers, about $10,000 a student comes to us from the state for students in NVUSD. If you go up Valley to St. Helena, which is a basic aid district, it's, again, round number, you know, probably more in the ballpark of $20,000, $21,000 per student. So there's a big discrepancy there.
And I've been aware of that St. Helena discrepancy for a long time, and a lot of people shake their heads, you know, because St. Helena has always had, historically, very high value real estate and a lot of wealthy people. And I mean, come on, how can that possibly be?
Yeah. That's, it's a dichotomy for sure. For sure.
But there's some structure, there's some financial structure that creates them as a basic.
It's a complicated formula. And I'm not going to, if I try to guess about it, I'm not going to be right.
Yeah.
So, but that is our reality.
I've heard it described two or three times in my life.
I
still don't understand it.
Yeah. That's our reality. So when you, when people, we talk about ADA and we talk about having students in our district, just people who, students who come to us, that's why declining enrollment is a huge problem. It's a huge issue. And it's not just MVUSD. It's all around the Bay Area. It's all around California. There's a high cost of living here. And people, generally speaking, if you're a young family with children who are going to be school age, you might not be able to afford to live either in the Bay Area or Napa or even California in some instances.
So when you mentioned $10,000 per student, that's
roughly,
annually?
Right.
So for the for that student's school year, so easily doing the math, right, 100 student population decline is $1 million, right? So that we get an idea real quickly when you talk about declining enrollment and the impact on the budget.
It makes a very big difference. Yeah. So that's a factor. You know, that's how we get our money from the state. That's how we get our money from your property taxes. It doesn't come straight to the school district.
Yeah.
And then of course there's, like I said, there's some federal money, and then there's also locally generated money. And for MVUSD, what that has looked like is bonds. And the bonds are always for facilities. They pay for facilities. Because the state doesn't give us any money for facilities. They don't give us any money for maintenance. And so we have to go back to our community and say, you know, we need some investment in our facilities. And so that's why there's, we have right now, if you're paying your property taxes like I am, you know, I'm paying for 2002 bond measure, 2006 bond measure, and a 2016 bond measure. And all that, you know, that money goes directly to our facilities. So that's, and then there's other, we don't have this here in Napa, but in the Bay Area, specifically in the South Bay, there's a lot of school districts that have local parcel taxes. And those pay for programs. Those pay for, you know, there's school districts that have property tax or parcel taxes that are just to fund visual and performing arts. Or parcel taxes that are just to fund counselors. It's dedicated revenue mm-hmm. that you go out to your community and say, you know, do we want it? Do we want these things? And it's fascinating because the bottom line in all this, when we say $10,000 per student from the state, that number is that number because California is 46th in the nation in funding our public schools. We have the top economy in the country. We have the sixth largest economy in the world. And we're 46th in the nation in funding our public schools.
Per student per year?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those hard to understand.
It is.
Everything about this conversation is hard to understand.
It is. And there was a time when California was number one. And I've heard Dr. Massetti, when she says it, it really strikes me. But what I've heard her say is, you know, if you walk into our schools these days, you'll see a psychologist's office and you'll see a nurse's office and there'll be storerooms. There'll be things stored in there because we had those things. We had psychologists and nurses at every school back when we were number one in funding. Mm. And now we don't have them anymore. So, you know, sometimes people say, well, what more, you know, what can we do? You know, what can we do to help fund our schools? And honestly, I think advocacy on behalf of the schools, which I think, you know, we're going to make more. It's one of more of our strategic – it's part of our strategic plan that we just approved, just the board just approved, mm-hmm. is to really put some effort into advocacy, you know, to go to Sacramento, bring buses of people, and say we really need to do a better job for our students. We need to do a better job if we want to have students leave high school, you know, ready for their career or ready for college, you know, or just equipped to deal with, you know, life outside of high school. Mm-hmm. 'Cause there's a lot of great things that the school does. There's a lot more we could do, yeah. you know, with the appropriate level of funding.
Mm-hmm. Now, you didn't mention any federal money in that funding picture. I know the federal government may have some grants and programs. Is there a federal component to local school funding?
Well, the two that I mentioned, the Title I and the special education, are sort of annual federal funding streams. Mm-hmm. There's always grant programs available. Yep. And we take advantage of those all we can. You know, there's folks in the school district who are very, very good at, you know, first of all, finding those grants, applying for those grants, getting those grants, and then implementing those grants. It's not ideal in that when you get a grant, there's also a lot of work that goes with that grant. You know, so you do the work, you do the good work that money's intended to do, and then you also spend a lot of time following up, which is appropriate. You're getting grant money. You should be answerable. You should be accountable for how it's spent. But it's a little bit more labor intensive, and it's very focused money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're talking with Elizabeth Emmett, mm-hmm. the spokesperson, the communicator for the Napa Valley Unified School District. This is our new weekly segment on school news, mm-hmm. during which we're going to, over weeks, cover all kinds of topics, I'm sure.
Yeah.
No limit. Another, as far as misconceptions are concerned, one that I see, and this is another place where, like, social media or comments on news stories, not just here but in various locations, the misconception that the city or the county controls the schools, you'll often see references to that.
Oh, yeah.
As if there's not an understanding of the governance.
Right.
Talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, so schools are special districts. You know, we exist. We have different boundaries than, for instance, NVUSD's attendance area is Yountville all the way down to American Canyon. So, of course, that incorporates the town of Yountville, the city, much of the city of Napa, and then the city of American Canyon. Mm-hmm. So we are different. We are a different governance body. We have an elected board, just like the county has an elected board. Each city and the town have elected boards. But one thing that you will see here in Napa County is that we work together really well.
Yeah.
We spend time with the city, you know, our board members spend time with the city council members and the town council members and the board of supervisors. Mm-hmm. You know, when we have issues that affect each other, you know, where schools are going to be sited or when construction is going to happen or, you know, traffic patterns around schools, there's a lot of coordination with other agencies. Mm-hmm. And we do it pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the confusion around that sometimes is because in some cities and other parts of the country, schools are operated by cities.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And
not
so,
here.
Yeah, people bring that knowledge from somewhere else or mm-hmm. think it all works the same everywhere. Mm-hmm. Another good example of how it's not the same everywhere, you know, drive 2 miles from here over to the county line to Sonoma. And how many school districts are there in Sonoma County?
40, oh, there's
50,
a lot.
60?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I remember running across that years ago covering elections, mm-hmm. and you're like reading, well, what should we be covering here? Well, there's 3 elections in for schools in Napa, and there's 42 in Sonoma County.
Yes.
How are we going to cover all that?
Yeah.
And that's a choice that's been made, you know, long in the past,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's actually a consolidation movement there.
Oh, that would, you know. There's something to be said for unified school districts. You mm-hmm. get a real, you get the benefit of
economy of scale.
There you go. Thank you. That's what I was looking for.
I can tell. All right. What else can we learn about funding and budgets?
Well, so we're starting our, you know, we'll be starting soon our budget for this next school year because it never stops. You know, whatever we're doing this spring sets the stage for the school year that starts in August. So we do all that work now. You know, but there's another thing I want to mention about, though, that revenue, because schools can also – part of our strategic plan is also to maximize where we can other revenue opportunities. So, for instance, you know, the school district, we rent out our facilities, you know, and if we make sure that the costs of those facilities – reflect the actual costs of renting out those facilities. You know, we want the community. We're community facilities. You know, we want the community to come in and you know, use our schools, use our auditoriums. And we just want to make sure that we recover the costs, the actual costs, janitors, you know, someone there to open and close and security and all that things. So that's one thing. You know, we have other ways to generate revenue. For instance, our charter schools, you know, they rent facilities from us. So we need to make sure that those fees are in line with what they should be. And so we'll be looking for more opportunities for those types of things. Trying to stabilize our enrollment. And, you know, there's opportunities there. You know, should we be offering online school for, you know, so students don't have to physically come to a building? You know, maybe we could be offering online school for folks who have some sort of homeschooling mm-hmm, idea mm-hmm. in mind. You know, so there's opportunities out there that the new superintendent is also investigating. Mm-hmm. And those are a lot of community conversations. You know, should we allow more students to come in from other districts? You know, and that's the history of that conversation has always been sort of around a misconception as well. You know, again, when people think their property taxes are funding schools directly, they think, well, why should I pay my property taxes for a student to come in from outside and take advantage of those facilities and that education? And the reality is, no, if someone comes in from outside, they're bringing that ADA with them mm-hmm. from the state that, as we said, goes up and comes back.
Right.
So there's just we want people to understand to the best knowledge they can. I mean, not everybody wants to wonk out on school funding,
yeah.
but we do want our community to understand, you know, basically how their schools work.
You know, and to know yeah. that if you think schools should have more money, the people you should be lobbying are at the state level,
yes.
starting with the governor and elected representatives who make those budgetary decisions. You know, a long time ago, there was that proposition that set 40% funding for the schools, and then, you know, it's been fought over time and time again, but it's still in effect, right?
Well, that kind of all went away with the LCFF.
Okay.
You know, so they had to redo. Oh, you mean of the state budget?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You know, that has sort of come and gone in mm-hmm. various ways. It's been, you know, chipped away and added to and chipped away and
yeah,
added
right.
to. I can say that, you know, I think Governor Newsom has been very vocal in his support of education.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll all be really interested to see what that actually looks like.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, definitely he's been very vocal about, you know, early literacy and, you know, pre-K type programs where, you know, the earlier children are literate and, you know, literate in English, the better they're going to do over time.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been very, very vocal about his support for
yeah.
that. And also, you know, his one-time money that he's put in this year's budget to help fund the unfunded liabilities of, you know, pension costs. Those are the two biggest factors. Declining enrollment and increasing pension costs are the biggest impacts on our budget lately. You know, about 85% of our budget is people.
Sure.
You know, teachers, counselors, administrators.
So, what happens next in your budgeting process? Uh-huh. You mentioned the superintendent with the advisory committee,
What?
Now
so
what?
We're just getting started, but you know, our budget goes hand in hand with our. I mentioned the local control funding formula. Well, when you do that, you put together a local control accountability plan, and that's a couple year plan where you say, all right, state, you were basically telling the state, here's the money that's going to come from you, and here's what we're going to do with it to educate our children. So the process of putting together our local control accountability plan and putting together our budget, of course, go hand in hand, because we're basically saying, here's where we're going to spend the money. So now those conversations are starting for us, and they start internally, but then we also work with the community. We know we have meetings with internally with staff and teachers, and we go out to the community and talk with parents and, you know, others in the community about where should we be putting our energy. You know, here's our choices that we might have to make. Here's some opportunities we might have. What do you think? And so as those conversations sort of happen in February, March, and then we start putting together draft budgets in April, May, you know, we have to start hearing from teachers. You know, we want teachers to tell us, hey, if, you know, are you going to retire this year? If you are, let us know, because we have to start our staffing plans. Mm-hmm. So it's a big moving mass right up until the budget is adopted in June.
Elizabeth Emmett from the Napa Valley Unified School District. And obviously, anybody wants to know more about anything you talked about or learn more about the budget, they can use a variety of communication methods to reach you.
Always on our website. You know, that's our first place to go. If you have questions that you would like a direct answer to, the best way to do that is email opinions@nvusd.org. That goes straight to us, and we'll help you out.
Very good. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Barry.
Have a good Monday.
You too.
And at this point, it is time for a break.